C4. Number 23A.
We take now the chapter Teaching Christian Science. And with that chapter, we start the last four chapters on the science vertical, which we have seen is all teaching us the idea that principle and idea is one. And each one of those four chapters in the vertical give us a special aspect of that oneness of principle and idea. So we keep constantly in our consciousness the pedal note of the oneness of principle and idea. And we see how thought is pushed, so to say, to this standpoint. Because the preceding chapter, Christian Science Practice, was telling us that with a scientific understanding of ideas, we can heal a situation. Now, naturally, the thought always comes up, well, is that the main point of Christian Science, that we can heal error, that we can heal disease, that we can correct the wrong situation? Always that sense of correcting and healing and putting right? Or is there not more about the whole idea of Christian Science? Is it not so that Christian Science should tell us how not to get sick? Therefore, the preventive art of Christian Science, how do we stay whole? Instead of teaching us constantly how we can get whole, why not teach how to be whole and how to remain whole? This is, by the way, a very interesting question, because one begins to see that in the world, especially in psychology, people begin to ask themselves this very question. They always were concerned with the diseased man, with man that has lost his inner harmony, and therefore psychology tried to find out where the errors are for that discord and correct the cause for that discord, never asking themselves really what is health. They always were concerned with disease and how to correct disease, and never has there been an investigation what is health. All the universities in the various branches of university, be it in psychology, medicine, or wherever it is, they teach how to heal, how to overcome disease, how to correct disease. There is never any course on the subject what is health, what is wholeness. Nobody knows really that. Therefore, they ask today now, like Maslow, the leading psychologist in this country, they ask, what is now the psychology of health? What is health? What is really health? That has never been investigated. A similar question comes up here in the Christian Science textbook at this very point, that through practice of Christian Science, thought is constantly interested in how to heal. But now the question comes up, how are we whole? What is necessary to be whole and to remain whole, never to fall away from wholeness? And this is the deeper sense of the chapter Christian Science Teaching. We have seen that at the end of the chapter Christian Science Practice, we had that great statement, Christian scientists, be a law unto yourself, that mental malpractice cannot harm you either when asleep or when awake, indicating this way already the passage, the bridge, so to say, from the 12th to the 13th chapter, saying, if you are a law to yourself, then either asleep or awake, you are protected, you are whole, and you remain whole, and nothing can get you out of balance. Indicating really what then the 13th chapter is presenting at large and is elaborating, namely the question, how to be a law to oneself? How can we be whole? How to be a law, how to embody the law, how to be the idea of science, how to be a Christian scientist so as to comprehend oneself as the idea of principle. Teaching is, so to say, introducing the method how to be a Christian scientist, how to be the idea of principle. Naturally, in order to be the idea of principle, we can reason quite logically that it demands what? That it demands, on the other side, that we are not a person, that we are not a personal ego, that we have to lay down the personal sense of us. It's not about healing that self, that human self, that human ego, and to see that actually man is not a person, but the idea of principle, a Christian scientist. When we see that here this adherence to the one principle is postulated, or that adherence to the principle is our protection against any disease, against any discord, then we begin to see that actually what is necessary is that man, and this is the main tone that goes through the chapter over and over, that man has to adhere to principle. This tone of adhering to principle, to abide in principle, to conform to principle, to teach ourselves to be an idea and a law of principle, this goes right through that chapter. If we catch that tone, we have caught the tone of the chapter. This constant adherence, abiding, obedience, conforming to principle. Why? Because we see that principle is the fact about the counterfeit called person. If we adhere to principle, we become principled, or principle idea. And principle idea is that which frees us from a personal sense or a personal ego. Also interesting is, in this chapter, the scriptural note at the beginning of the chapter, which says, "Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be yet wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning." You see, it's not healing. If it would be healing, she would have had to choose another verse, a verse that would say, if you don't know, then learn something, and then you will be wise. If you are unjust, well, better know what justice is, and then you will be just. But here it is not so. It's absolutely on the level of harmony, namely teach a wise man, not an ignorant man. Teach a wise man, the man who already has a standard of understanding, and he will yet be wiser. Showing really that old dictum of the Greeks, that only like can understand like, that unlike can never understand the like, that ignorance can never understand the knowledge of God. Therefore, that what we have to do is to mobilize and motivate and activate within ourselves the understanding we already have, and see that with that understanding we abide by that principle, conform to the principle, then this wise man will receive more wisdom. He will increase in wisdom. He will increase in his principled attitude. I guess if we see that, then we have caught the tone of this chapter, that tone which says abide by that which is principle-like, and that excludes that which is principle-unlike. Now, if we have this subject to consider and to elaborate through the seven synonymous term, then we can try ourselves really what qualities are necessary in man in order to be really in agreement with that principle. Perhaps I should have said also that this chapter I don't have it in my notes, so it doesn't matter, is a lot about the ethics and moral of Christian Science. In no other chapter does she bring up this so much. And under that ethic and moral of Christian Science, she means to adhere to the moral of Christian Science, not to the moral, say, of the religious code or a human code. It is the ethics of Christian Science. It's not the ethic of common ethical doctrines in the world. And this ethic and moral of Christian Science is naturally to adhere to the principle, to abide by this principle, and not to deviate from them. Now, what is that wise man that can get more wisdom, that and through more instruction? What can we mobilize within ourselves that is principle-like? See, this would be the subject here in teaching. The wise man will receive even more wisdom. What is then that wise attitude within ourselves when we consider it from the seventh synonymous term? And we could see, perhaps if we look at mind, what is wise in man in a scientific way? Now we have to see some kind of scientific attitude. You see, the scientific nature in man, the scientist in us, is appealed to and say, increase what you have. Now, if we go through our list of ideas in mind and just think them over and say, what qualities do we have under mind that would be in conformity with scientific attitude and principled attitude, perhaps we would see if we have a principled attitude when we let ourselves be guided step by step, not by the human mind, not by our wisdom, not by our conceptions, not by our human will, but if we let ourselves be guided and led by the divine mind. It is as if she would say here, that's your first aspect of being a scientist, that you let yourself be guided by a higher mind than your mind, by the divine mind. Here we have the wise leadings of the divine mind. If we would consider our scientific attitude by adhering to the principle from the point of view of spirit, we could go through that list of characteristics of spirit and see what is that makes us adhere to spirit. I think that which makes us adhere to spirit is that we love the spiritual, that we trust the spiritual, that we worship that spiritual. Therefore here it is the sense that we should love the spiritual and good, that we should therefore on the other side have an inward attitude of condemning evil, of rising above evil, of rejecting evil. This is what the second subject tells us here. Can you see how you can, through the place value of the matrix, so to say, scan out your list of terms on the seventh synonymous term and see which term, which characteristic of a synonymous term is giving the same tone as the place value in the matrix. Here, the place value of science as the word, teaching. Could you follow that point? Yes, good. So, again, we go to soul, and we have soul as a super symbol for many, many characteristics of soul. And so we say, now, what is that characteristic of soul which would indicate our unity with principle, our obedience to principle, our adherence to principle? I think in soul we would find that it is the rule of soul, abiding and using and practicing the divine rules. Rules that have a lot to do with, really, with science and scientific methods, scientific adherence. adhere to the rules of soul. Adhering to the rules of soul would mean that we, on the other hand, would shut out really malpractice, because malpractice is a wrong control, a wrong ruling, but something outside of God, something different than God, is ruling us, controlling us. That through the rule of soul, we shut out all the other suggestions. We shut out the suggestions of malpractice, of evil, rebuke it. That very sense of rebuke comes in. You see again those many rules that are presented here. Actually, here in the chapter on teaching Christian Science, one has quite a good part of the subject, how to deal with malpractice and with malicious malpractice. Actually, many things that she in former edition had in the chapter on animal magnetism, she transferred to the chapter teaching Christian Science, because one can see that that which tries to prevent us from abiding by principle is actually animal magnetism, that tries to attract us away, to take us away from that one attraction, the attraction to the divine principle. If we look at it from the standpoint of principle and try to see what is necessary within us in order to adhere and abide with that divine principle, perhaps we would see that that which is necessary is what principle asks, that we take principle as fundamental and foundational, therefore a complete trust in the omnipotence of principle. What's the use of seeing that principle is ever operative and ever active and the spiritual power if from our side we are not going to trust it, put all our trust into it? So, can you see, here we find always qualities which are related to us what we should do in order to be guided or led by the divine principle, so as to be in accord with divine principle. Again, in mind it said, let yourself be guided and led by the divine mind. You yourself should love the good of spirit. Spirit is the only love, the good, and resist evil. In soul, apply the rules of soul, the greater controlling the lesser. Soul sense within you, rejecting, rebuking, malpractice, all the attacks. In principle, trusting in what? In the omnipotence of principle. Can you hear? They are all qualities that are not the synonym itself. They are qualities that we have to have in order to be at one with the synonyms. Therefore, in life, you see at once, there too, there must be a quality which we can activate in man that has the ability to be at one with life. Therefore, she takes here the divine methods, that we should use divine methods instead of human methods, material methods, instead of using quackery. We should, you know, quackery is a false method, is a method that does not rely on God. And so all these methods are the right method. Consecration comes in here too. That's the method how to abide by the divine principle. Isn't it wonderful, those subjects? Huh? They are not just, they keep a pedal note. Huh? They always keep a pedal note, namely that which is defined through the place value within the matrix. Here, science as the word. Always, what do I have to do, the word, to approach principle? That's the word. Science says to be one with principle. oneness. Or take the sixth subject. The sixth subject here is showing what should be activated within us, what should be used within us in order to be one with truth. And the answer here is, well, you must be a Christian and a scientist. You must wed, so to say, Christian nature with scientific nature. And so we have here those great statements: a Christian must be a scientist, and a scientist must be a Christian, so that each one can make himself the Son of God. Here we have a sense he must make himself the Son of God. She doesn't present here the fundamental facts of being, that Christ is the Son of God, Son with a capital S. Here it is much more in truth that through a divine consciousness, through a scientific consciousness, we should do what? Now comes the unity with truth, to make ourselves the Son of God. And actually, this demands then, as a last subject of love, that terrific big subject which we love so much, which contains anatomy, really spiritual anatomy, that passage that contains scientific obstetrics, is the whole tone of love, showing us what? Again, what is necessary within ourselves that is able to be one with love, to make us really love's idea? What is love? Love is completeness, love is perfection. What is that which can make us one with completion, with perfection? And so the chapter teaches us the way how to be one, namely through spiritual anatomy and scientific obstetrics, which show that we have there the method of how to bring forth wholeness, completeness, so that we are complete. How can we give birth within ourselves of the idea of God, of the true idea? And so through that birth that brings forth the idea of science, we are no more a mortal, we are no more a person, and at that point we have reached the climax of this method of how to become one with principle, and are actually now one, because we represent now the divine principle within ourselves. We have given birth to the idea within ourselves. Then it's no more outside of us, then we are the very manifestation, the very exposition, the very representation of the idea. That naturally includes that imperfection is yielding through that terrific sense of bringing forth within ourselves the true idea. The idea? The idea of what? The idea of science. I think there is a great point in this scientific obstetrics to consider. Usually, alone the term obstetrics is misleading for our line of thinking, because the moment we think of obstetrics, we think of a birth, and when we think of a birth, we think of a person. Now, this scientific obstetric is not the birth of a person, of children. That scientific obstetric is not the birth of the idea man. We still are a bit on the wrong track. We still think birth has to do with a person. Actually, what she wants to point out here, that it is the birth of the idea. And she doesn't say the idea man. She said to to attend properly the birth of the new child. And this is at once misleading. You see, if it's a child, we think of a personal child, whereas she uses very often that term child as a symbol for a young idea, for a new idea, and not just for a human child. To attend properly the birth of the new child, comma, or, she says or, meaning she gives a better explanation, or divine idea. The birth of divine idea. You see, she not even says here of a divine idea. Usually we take it, and it's absolutely appropriate to do so, that we take it for the birth of a divine idea. Just as it is appropriate, say, to use that paragraph in childbirth, it is appropriate. The only thing is that we have then translated the higher meaning to the basis of the human. So it's absolutely appropriate. That's a great point we see when once our consciousness is cultured in dimensionalism, where it begins to be able to reason in levels, then any statement we can transpose onto other levels, either upward or downward, that doesn't matter. Here, it is a statement of the level of divine science, namely the birth of divine idea in the singular, but we can transpose it to the birth of a divine idea, a specific divine idea, that we can too, and we can that would be absolute Christian science, and we can translate it right down to the level of Christian science, namely where it is applicable for the birth of a child. That we can use that in all three different levels. But the teaching here is actually to show us the birth of divine idea. The idea, and not an idea. And the idea, divine idea, I would see as the idea of divine science. That should be born to us. That's the new child. And if we give birth to that new child called divine idea, divine science, then actually we have accomplished what she has seen before, that Jesus spiritual origin was divine science. That Jesus' spiritual origin was not actually not Mary, that it was not even the Immaculate Conception, that Jesus' origin was not even the Father or God, that Jesus' origin was divine science because he practiced divine science. This is actually the new mutation that is ready to come in human history, or in the long million-year history of man, that now he mutates out of a concept of being a man into the idea of divine science. Then he is the Son, capital S, of God, and no more the Son of Man. So this is what makes us to be a scientist, and a complete idea of this science.